Okay, good morning, everybody. I think this is my first time here. Not in Michigan, but here. Okay, so I have been coming to USA for many years already. And today, I would like to share with you some important teaching of the Buddha, which I think will be helpful for your practice, especially in your daily life. May I know how long you sit every day? How many hours you sit per day on the cushion? On the cushion? Half an hour? 1 hour? 2 hours?
30 minutes.
So 20 minutes a day. We have 24 hours a day. So usually we sit 2 hours a day. I demand my student to sit 2 hours a day. But I also understand as a lay person, you don't have much time to sit still on the cushion. Therefore, today, I would like to share one way of practice that you don't have to sit still on the cushion. You can carry that Dharma with you when you move around so that you don't feel bad if you don't sit still on the cushion. Okay? This is called moment-to-moment practice. You practice it momentarily, moment-to-moment. If you can, carry it with you wherever you go. Okay. And what is the goal of the practice? What is the goal? I know everybody come with their own different goal. But one ultimate goal, because we want to free from suffering. We want to be happy. Everybody wants it, right? And as we want to be happy, we must be skillful enough to see through our mind and body. Okay. So in our daily life, we are moving around. Our senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind are open. Open for the impingement of external sense objects. For example, the eye. The moment we awake, the eye sees something. So when your eyes sees desirable form, desirable or pleasant, agreeable, visible object, then what do you feel? What do you feel?
Pleasant.
Okay, after pleasant feeling, would the pleasant feeling develop more? Or it just stop there? It develops more or stop there? Stop short. That is wonderful. That pleasant feeling, will it develop to liking? Or attachment? Or craving? Yes or no? Yes, yeah. So that pleasant feelings will develop into attachment, craving, or liking. And when that attachment grows stronger, it becomes stronger, then it will not satisfy just in the mind. Right? You want to get it to satisfy your desire. So you want to get it. If you want to get it, you want to get something which you like, when your eye sees something pleasant, agreeable, you want to get it, then you have to act. If you don't act, how you get it? Right? You have to act. You have to do something. This act, do something, is called karma in the teaching of the Buddha. I think everybody know, karma or karma, karma. Sanskrit we call karma. Pali we call kamma. So this kamma, whatever kamma you do, it leaves behind karmic energy. This karmic energy follow the mental stream. Life after life, life after life. And when this karmic energy meet with favorable condition, then it produces its effect. Then we call karmic effect. So whatever action we do, physically, verbally, mentally, it is sure to lift the force, the potential to produce its effect. And if we do something because of craving, because of attachment, because of desire, then it's considered wholesome or unwholesome? Unwholesome. So if it's unwholesome, can the effect be wholesome? No. So the effect, when the effect ripen, and because it's unwholesome effect, then we suffer accordingly. Therefore, in our daily life, when our senses are open to the impingement, not only eyes, ear also, when somebody abuse you, unpleasant feeling. And sometimes the unpleasant feeling will not stop short there. It develops into irritation, anger, resentment, and so on. When that anger becomes stronger, then you also want to act, right? You want to act, and you may hit somebody, may utter harsh speech, or you may fight with someone. This also called unwholesome action. Unwholesome bodily action, once performed, leave behind potentiality. Just like you throw a seed on the soil. When this seed meet with favorable condition, with enough sunlight, moisture, and so on, then it sprout. Similarly, whatever karmic force, whatever karma we perform, it has its potentiality to produce its effect. Just like a seed has the potentiality to sprout when the conditions are favorable. Therefore, if we understand cause and effect relationship, we have to guard our mind. We cannot act whenever we like it, we act with craving. Whenever we dislike, we act with anger. This way of acting hurts ourselves, right? Hurts ourselves, and we also hurt other people. And when we get very angry with people, we scold them, we hit them, So we also hurt other people. And this energy, anger, the energy of anger is very unpleasant and is spread out. So when you get very angry, if somebody step into your house and saw you are shouting, do you think that your friend will run away or will come forward to you? Most probably, I will go away first. I will go away and wait until your anger subsides, only I will talk to you, right? Because that energy is very unpleasant. That defilements, that energy is very unpleasant, then nobody wants to come close to us. So if we understand how our mental state create karma, create unwholesome karma, or create unwholesome energy that affect us and others, we have to control our mind. How to control? Have you ever control your defilements? No?
Yeah. It's difficult, but
so when defilements like anger, resentment, craving, greed, delusion arise in the mind, have you ever tried to control it or not?
Yes.
Yes. How you control? How?
Well, I try to hold a space for it and be witness to it.
Witness.
I watch it. Mm-hmm. I try to be, part of me is the witness to the energy, that agitation, and I try to hold a space for it and watch it.
It works for you?
Most of the time.
Good. Very good. Okay. So we have to control our mind in order not to hurt ourselves and others. And we are a practitioner. We have learned the Dharma, so we must use the, we must apply the Dharma to protect us and to protect others. This is how the Dharma helps. So, when the defilements arise in the mind, how to control the mind? First, we apply mindfulness, sati mindfulness. Everybody know what is the meaning of mindfulness, right? In America, mindfulness is very popular. But mindfulness is not as simple as you understand it. Not just aware, not enough. Mindfulness has characteristic of non-superficiality, not superficial. So we don't aware, let's say anger arises in my mind. I know it. I know it. Know it only. Superficially knowing is not mindfulness. Mindfulness goes deep into the object. Mindfulness sink into the object. For example, anger has arisen in me. I get very angry. So if I have mindfulness, so first I know it, recognize it. Anger has arisen. I recognize it, then the mind goes into anger and take it as an object of observation. Take it as an object of your observation. The object of your mindfulness. So you see it. You don't react to the anger. If you react to the anger, then there's no mindfulness. You are carried away by your anger. Then we cannot say you have mindfulness, right? But nowadays, people define mindfulness is just aware. To me, it's not enough. Mindfulness goes much deeper. Okay, so the mind hold it, and when the mind hold it, then it slow down our reaction. If you don't hold it, then you just react compulsively, spontaneously. Whenever there's anger, jealousy, greed, craving, attachment arise in you, if there's no mindfulness that hold it, then we react almost spontaneously, compulsively. Then later on we may feel remorse. That remorse also make us feel very unhappy again. So the cycle goes. Therefore, with mindfulness, you hold it. So mindfulness is compared like brake system in a car. So when you meet with red light, you have to stop. Stop so that you will not meet with accident. Similarly, mindfulness stop your compulsive reaction. It slow down your reaction. So when you slow down the reaction and you hold the object, you hold the anger, don't react to the anger. Mindfulness does not allow you to react with anger. So you hold the object, then you slow down the action. And because of slowing down, and because hold on to that object, then it gives you a space. It gives you room to see that anger will change. That anger will change. Because Buddha say, nothing is permanent. But if you react compulsively, very fast,
then you are unable to see the impermanency of that anger. But if you hold it for some time and believe, everything will change. Then the nature will unfold itself. You will see the change of that anger. Or you will see the change of that mental state. Whatever mental state. Maybe craving, maybe attachment, maybe conceit, and so on. So in this sense, mindfulness protects the mind. So the manifestation of mindfulness is guardianship. It guards your mind. Guards your mind from compulsive reaction. And it also gives room for wisdom to arise. This is the benefit of having mindfulness. And this you can practice in your daily life. Whenever you go, when your eye sees something unpleasant, when your ear hears something unpleasant or abusive word or accusation or so on and so on, then unpleasant feeling arises. Immediately, you have to look inside. Look inwardly. Observe. Watch that unpleasant feeling with mindfulness. So that it will not develop up to anger. In case it develops up to anger, you still can hold that anger. Don't react to that anger. Hold it, because mindfulness can slow down our action. Similarly, the tongue also same. When the tongue tastes something very pleasant, without mindfulness, we will stretch our hand one more piece, one more cup, one more. So we keep on following our impulse. You may think there's nothing harm. I eat more. I like it, I eat more. Of course, there's nothing harm. But you will put on weight day after day, day after day, day after day. Not only that. It shapes your character. It shapes your character and it becomes the greed craving will increase more and more, and it shapes your character and you will have greed temperament. I mean, you are a person who inclined to greed. So it becomes your second nature, it becomes your second character. So whatever refinements that arise in your mind, if you let loose, you follow your refinements without controlling your mind, then it shapes your character. And once the character is shaped, it becomes very difficult to change. Like angry temperament, anger temperament. If a person has anger temperament and he gets angry very easily, little thing annoys him. And how can he be happy, right? If you always get angry with things, with person, with environment, with everything, then how can you be happy? You cannot be happy. Therefore, mindfulness is very important. However, the goal of Buddha's teaching does not stop short at mindfulness. We have to go one step further. That is to develop our wisdom. To develop our wisdom. So when we talk about wisdom, what do you understand? Wisdom. How you understand the word wisdom in the teaching of the Buddha?
Wholesome action.
Yes. Yes.
Not recreating karmic patterns.
Good. Okay.
Create, new patterns.
Mm-hmm.
In the future.
Good.
loss for a particular virtuous action.
Okay, some more? Okay. Tata, you, what do you say? Wisdom? How you understand wisdom? Yeah. Oh, okay. Some other different answer, yes?
Open-mindedness.
Okay. Some more? Any other? Different answer?
Seeing the truth of things.
What are the truth?
Impermanence, yeah. Unsatisfactoriness, lack of self.
Good. Very good. This is the core of the teaching of the Buddha. So this is the essence of the teaching of the Buddha. Seeing the truth, what are the truth? Impermanent, suffering, and non-self of what?
Everything. Or all conditioned arisings.
Let us more specify.
Mind and body.
Yes, exactly. We want precise one, okay? I'm Abhidhamma teacher. I want everything precise. Because this helps you to have better understanding. So, why we come to this world? Do you think the world is suffering or happy? Happiness?
Suffering,
that's why you come here to practice, right? The world is suffering. Where the suffering comes from?
Attachment.
Very good, attachment. Craving.
Aversion.
Craving to what?
Anything.
I want precise answer. Craving only two things for craving to your own mind and body. Another one, craving for external things. External can be your wife, your husband, your family, or your possession, your property, your job, your car, your house, and so on. So inanimate and animate things, with life and without life. So internal craving to one's mind and body, external craving to other people's mind and body, as well as possession, property, and so on. And because of these two types of craving, then we have a lot of suffering. Right? And why? Okay, another question. Why we have so much craving for our mind and body? Why? Because you think craving to mind and body give us happiness, right? Good answer.
We're trying to make things other than the way they are.
Try to make things other than the way
they are.
Trying to make things permanent.
Very good. Your answer also very good. To summarize all your answer, why we crave to our mind and body, because we see mind and body give us happiness. We try to, to let it give us happiness by seeing mind and body as permanent. As permanent, as providing us happiness. And the most important, we think it is a self, a permanent self. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, because we wrongly perceive mind and body give us happiness, we wrongly perceive mind and body as permanent, as possessing a permanent and abiding self. Therefore, we strongly cling to mind and body. And why we strongly cling to mind and body? Because in our mental stream, there is one mental factor that block our wisdom, that block us to see things as they really are, that block us to see the truth. What is that mental factor?
Ignorance.
Very good.
What she said?
Ignorance.
Ignorance. So ignorance means darkness of the mind. Because of darkness of the mind, we cannot see clearly. We see opposite. What cannot give us happiness, we think they give us happiness. So because of this ignorance. And the practice of the teaching of the Buddha, precisely the aim is to remove this ignorance. The aim of the teaching of the Buddha precisely is to remove this ignorance, the darkness of the mind. When darkness is removed, light appears. When light appears, you see things as they really are. Mind and body are impermanent, suffering, and non-self. So mind and body, when you see through mind and body, in order to see through mind and body as impermanent, suffering, and non-self, you need to apply wisdom. Therefore, just to have mindfulness alone is not enough. Although mindfulness practice is very popular in America, but if you want to realize the goal of the teaching of the Buddha, you have to add one more ingredient. That is what? Wisdom. Yes. This part should not be ignored. To add the ingredient of wisdom. So come back to the practical experience in our life. Let's say I feel very angry. Angry towards something. Then please don't look outside. Don't look at the things that cause you anger. If you look externally, if you look at the things that cause you anger, your anger will never come to an end. You keep on finding fault in others. Forget to look inwardly your own anger. When anger arises, know it. Sati, mindfulness, know. Anger has arisen. Okay, hold it. Slow down your action. Mindfulness can slow down your action. Slow down. And after that, apply wisdom. How to apply? Note, mentally note, anger is impermanent. Note it constantly. Mentally make a mark. If you do not note in this way, what will happen to your mental state? It will pass, anger will pass. If you do not note in this way, you think the anger will
not.
It will not pass.
It will not pass.
It will not pass. It will not pass means it's permanent, right? You see, it will not pass means it's permanent. Therefore, if you do not note impermanent, then your mental will perceive anger as permanent, which is not accordant with the truth. Right? The truth is impermanent, but because we don't contemplate accordant with the truth, then we will perceive it will not pass. Therefore, anger is permanent. If you perceive anger is permanent, you feel even worse, more suffering, right? Because anger is permanent, how can I free from anger? It's permanent. Then the suffering will never end. Therefore, to help ourselves to free from suffering, we contemplate impermanent. Cool down the heart first. And this way of contemplation is in accordance with the truth. Because Buddha say for 45 years, everything is impermanent. But why we cannot see impermanent? Because we cling to the permanent. Because we cling to the permanent, therefore we cannot see impermanent. So how not to cling to permanent? How not to cling to permanent? Then we have to replace it with impermanent. So mentally say impermanent. When you mentally say impermanent, then you will see your anger subside a little bit, subside, and finish. Go away already. This is how the wisdom can help us free from the defilements. Okay? And there are four benefits when you contemplate impermanent. The first one, as you say just now, if we do not contemplate impermanent, that anger will not pass. So this is called the distorted perception of permanent. Distorted perception of permanent. So if we contemplate impermanent, then we will change. We change our distorted perception of permanent. This is the first benefit. Are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. Because you are very quiet, so I'm not sure whether you are with me or not. Okay. So this is the first benefit. This distorted perception is very dangerous for us. So by contemplating impermanent, we change it bit by bit, little by little, day after day, we change it. This is the first benefit. The second benefit, when you contemplate impermanent, whatever mental state, happiness or sorrow, depression, anxiety, worry, fear, anger, and so on. You contemplate it impermanent, then your mentality harmonize with reality, or we call your mentality the way you perceive things, the way you view things, synchronize with reality. The reality of what?
Truth.
The reality of impermanent, the truth. So if the way you perceive things, if it is in accordance with the truth, harmonize, synchronize with the truth, then the truth will manifest itself very quickly. You got it? Got it or not?
Mm-hmm.
So you will see impermanent very fast, very quickly. If the truth say the truth is impermanent, but I perceive things as permanent, then we are going different direction, right? How can you see the impermanent? Because our mind is obsessed with the perception of permanent. So we never come to agreement. So in our meditation, we never see impermanent, just mindfulness. But no, never see impermanent. Why? Because we do not contemplate impermanent. We do not tune in our mind with reality, with reality of impermanence. So as a conclusion, if you contemplate impermanent, you will see impermanent very quickly. Because the way you perceive things now start to harmonize with the truth. Does it make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very good. I think this class is very receptive. Very, very receptive. That makes me happy. Okay. So this is the second benefit. The third one, I hear something very unpleasant. Or I hear something very pleasant. Or my eyes see something very pleasant. So pleasant feeling arise in me. If I do not contemplate this pleasant feeling as impermanent, then what will happen to this pleasant feeling? It will
craving.
It will develop to craving, attachment, liking, strong clinging, and so on. Right? And Buddha say cravings are the truth, are the origin of all suffering. So once you crave for something, you start to cling for something, then your mind is not peaceful anymore. You want to get it, your mind is not peaceful. Therefore, in order to prevent the mind from pleasant feeling develops up to craving, then you contemplate impermanence of your pleasant feeling to sever the craving. If you contemplate impermanence of the pleasant feeling, at that moment you sever the craving. The craving will not develop. You can try. Mm-hmm. Put into practice and see how true is what sister say. But one day practice not enough. Mm-hmm. At least few months. You will see the effect. Few months is considered very short. Very short. In order to see the effect, if you practice few months in this way, contemplate impermanent, you will see many things start to change. The way you perceive things will change. You will feel you have more happiness now. Why? Because you have less attachment already. Once you contemplate impermanent, then your attachment become less and less and less. When attachment become less, then happiness grow more and more. That you can practice and see by yourself. Therefore, Buddha's teaching, Buddha say, Ihi Pasiko. The virtues of the Dharma. One, we have six type of the virtues of the Dharma. One of them is called Ihi Pasiko. Ihi Pasiko means come and see. Buddha never say, come and believe. Believe what I say, just believe. No. Buddha say, come and see. See first. And practice accordingly. See whether it's beneficial or not. He never asked, come, just follow. No, it's not blind faith. The teaching of the Buddha never based on blind faith. It based on practical experience that can be realized by anyone who follow the path. As long as you put it into practice, then you will see the effect. This is called Ihi Pasiko. Okay. So these are the benefits. The third benefit, sever the craving. And the fourth one, so if you contemplate impermanent, this word is very powerful. Simply the word of impermanence will teach your consciousness to let go. If you don't contemplate impermanent, then your mind cling to that state, whatever mental state. But the moment you just contemplate impermanent, the words will teach your subconsciousness, let go. Since it is impermanent, how can I cling to it? How can I hold on to it? How can it be there all the time? Right? So subconsciously, it also helps you to let go of that clinging. So these are the four benefits that you can experience when you contemplate impermanent. Okay, I only have 15 minutes, but I have no time to share with you how to contemplate non-self. I think one impermanence should be enough. If you can contemplate impermanent in your daily life, I think should be enough to help you to have more and more happiness in your life. So for contemplate non-self, maybe next time. If not, you may get confused. Okay, so for 15 minutes, we open for discussion.
Can't that contemplation of impermanence sometimes flip over into craving? As you were speaking, I was remembering when I was a teenager, and I would spend my summers at a place I adored. Sad because I knew it was impermanent. And then that sadness, would color the whole rest of the summer and create unhappiness.
Right. Because you hold on to permanent.
Right.
Yeah. So if at that time.
And with an awareness of impermanence.
Right.
Because it was impermanence that I craved.
No, because of impermanence you crave, and it's because you perceive it, you want it to be permanent.
Right.
Yeah, you want it to be permanent.
But it wasn't. Yeah. So that
creates. Yeah, the truth is impermanent. You have to bear in mind. If you always want things to be permanent. You want your relationship to be permanent. You want your son and daughter to be permanent. You want your family to be permanent. You want your job to be permanent. If it changed, then what happened to your mental state? Sorrow, grief, lamentation, right? So why not get ready first, impermanent? Nothing will last. So get ready first. Then when things really change, then your mind will be unshaken under all circumstances.
I think it's more difficult to accept impermanence with pleasant things in life than it is to accept it without the unpleasant things.
Yeah. Yeah. This craving is a sign of craving. People crave for pleasant things, right? So anyway, whether you crave for the good thing or you push away the bad thing, good or bad are impermanent. You just have to accept it, whether you like it or not. This is the truth, right? This is the truth. Yes, yes.
How do we apply the wisdom of impermanent to the fear of death?
Very good question. I think most people also have this question, right? Do you fear of death? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah. Why? Why? No. Let me share with you. Because we cling to a permanent self. If you don't see the self who is going to die, you will not have that fear. Because you cling to a permanent self. You cling to the mind and body as myself, my. You don't want it to destroy. You don't want it to pass away. Therefore, you have that fear. That fear comes from not seeing things as they really are, as non-self. So if you can tackle this one, you will never have fear about death. So I would like to say it again because this is a profound subject. Yeah? Why the fear arises when we are facing the death? Because you cling to a permanent self. In the teaching of the Buddha, everything is cause and condition. Mind and body are also cause and condition. Unfortunately, I don't have time to tell you what are the causes. What are the causes and conditions for this mind and body? But I would recommend you to read my book. I have explained it very detailed in my book. What is rebirth? What is rebirth? So unraveling of the mind and body in Abhidhamma.
Can we get a signed copy?
Moni, can I say something?
It's a sign of attachment.
Moni, say something about the book.
There's five copies of the book here. They're available on Amazon, but also someone who gets the imports from Malaysia, she said that if people want, they're $19, but if people want and there's not enough here, she'll send the books to me and I can give them, you know, so you don't have to go on Amazon and pay the shipping. So.
And then it's also a donation to her.
Yes, it all goes to, she's building a monastery in Malaysia right now. One building's up and the next one is going to be built. So it all goes to the monastery.
So how do we contact you?
Well, maybe we can, if you want. What's it? Yeah, there's.
We'll put it on the website.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it there for right now because
okay.
Time is precious.
Yes, right, okay.
Okay. So, wait one moment. And what I have explained just now, mindfulness and wisdom, are also written in this book because just now time is very short. It's more clear in the book. And how the rebirth goes on, you know, how we cling to the identity, permanent self, are all explained in this book. So because time is very short, but we take years to write a book, but here only 1.5 hours, 1 hour I cannot explain in length, okay? Okay, somebody, okay, yes.
What if there's an activity that really is life-giving for you and you enjoy, like painting,
and
picnic.
And you say
painting.
You want
painting.
Painting.
Mm-hmm.
Like
okay.
You want to do it.
Mm.
If I say impermanent, I'm not going to paint. That's it. Why bother?
No.
So
no.
How do you distinguish
you
between things that are really life-giving for you and things that aren't going to be beneficial for you?
Like,
I could see me rationalizing, oh, that's impermanent. I'm not going to bother about that.
If it is necessary to paint, you have to paint because it's necessary. But if not necessary to paint, I don't see the point. You have to paint, right?
How do you define necessity?
This is your way of perceiving it.
Mm-hmm.
Like to me, if I see I live in a house without painting, I still can be very happy. With painting, I still can be happy. Then why should I paint?
I'm not talking about painting a house, I'm talking about art.
Is it your job or your hobby or what? Is it your profession or?
It's not my profession, but it's something, I'm an artist, I call myself an artist. And if I say, oh, that's impermanent,
mm-hmm.
I say, why bother to paint? And yet, it's, there's something in me. I mean, how does it relate to passion?
Okay,
that's
I think, okay, I give, I give you my example, my own example, so you can relate. For me, teaching the Dharma, are also impermanent. What should I teach? Right? What should I teach? Because it benefits others. Because my teaching can benefit others. So although it's impermanent, I have to teach. Not for my own happiness and welfare. Although, while I am giving talk or while I am sharing the Dharma, I have a lot of happiness. After I step out, all happiness gone already, impermanent. So I don't cling to that happiness. But I also have some clinging that my talk benefit other people. That makes me happy. Although the happiness is also impermanent, right? But it really makes me happy because my talk benefit others. So although it's impermanent, I have to do. So it's up to you to decide. If you think your arts can benefit other people, go ahead. But if you think your art is for your own happiness, you feel happy with it also, go ahead. But if you think it's impermanent, not beneficial to anyone, where should I paint? Then stop. So it's really up to you to decide, okay?
Thank you.
Mm.
Another question.
Yes.
Is there no such thing as an absolute self? I mean, that stays all the time and doesn't go away.
No, in teaching of the Buddha, no. But in all other religion, yes. In Christian, in Hindu, in Islam, yes, there is. But in Buddhism, no. Buddhism only deal with ultimate truth. What is the self? Self consists of five aggregates: materiality, feeling, perception, formation and consciousness, or in summary, mind and matter, mind and body, only these two. And these two are keep on changing. Why they are changing? Because they're based on condition, and condition are keep on changing, therefore mind and body also keep on changing. When something keep on changing, we cannot say there is absolute self. Absolute self means something is permanent. But in Buddha's teaching, we never say Buddha from his and after his enlightenment until he passed away, he only preached impermanence. So everything keep on changing. But why we cannot see? Because our distorted perception of permanent block us to see. And also the clinging to the permanent, and also because of ignorance, the darkness of mind that block us to see things as they really are. Therefore, we come to practice in order to develop the wisdom to remove that ignorance so that we can see clearly. There's no absolute self. It's okay? Any other question? Oh, yes.
You speak of this impermanent, but I'm not clear on how I would practice it. Do I simply keep reciting
to myself silently the word,
yes,
and that in itself,
yes,
will manifest?
Yes, yes, yes. You, yes, you silently or note it mentally, silently say, impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Take object, whatever object arises in your mind and body, take it as object, then put the words impermanent into it. That's how you can do it. And this is what I practice. And I practice this one within a very short time. My mentality changed. I become less attached to many things. I become more happy. And my life become more easy and have more compassion for other people. You can see the effect very fast. So Yvonne, if you want shortcut, this is the shortcut. This is the only shortcut that I can give you. Many people want shortcut. Yes?
And like with your question, I'm also, I'm a musician, and music means a lot to me.
Okay.
But there have been times in my life when physical concerns that made me think that I wouldn't be able to continue doing very much, or all kinds of considerations that come into it. And I found, by stepping back and saying, as long as I'm able to do it and it's satisfying and it reaches out, I will do it as much as I can. If it doesn't last, it doesn't last. Something else will be there. Something comes from it, no matter how far I take it. So it's why sometimes we get confused about not attachment and stepping back and impermanence, because, as you say, it could make you think, why do anything other than sit all day, and then make your living. But it's sort of like you have to take it as far as it can go, but knowing that, who knows, it may be taken from you tomorrow.
Whatever happens on the way.
So whatever you've done with it has created the best karma you can.
Yes, yes. I think sometimes when we do something, we can, let's say, some of the hobby you all like, you like something, you do it, but don't so attach to it. Because it's the attachment that causes you suffering. Yeah. Once you lose it, then you feel sorrow, lamentation, right? Yeah. But you do it without so much attachment, once you lose it, it's fine.
But that doesn't mean saying also, well, I'm doing it without attachment, so
you still
want to do it as completely.
Right, right. Wholeheartedly. Yes, 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 yes.
How can we have more faith in the Dharma?
I think the faith comes when you gain the benefit from practicing the Dharma. If you do not gain any benefit from practicing the Dharma, I think the faith will not arise. So you have to practice it, then experience the good result, then the faith. Do you ask a question?
I'm sorry, it's not a very profound question, but I want to understand someone else's anger feels very permanent, and we say to ourselves that even their anger is impermanent, but it continues to manifest. So it's really like my fear of the permanence of their anger.
Your fear of permanent of his anger?
Because over the years, manifest.
Okay.
And
yes.
And so, how I live with that?
That because it's connected with other people, it's a bit difficult, right? For us, we can control, but other people, we cannot control him. Therefore, you have to contemplate your fear. You know you are unable to change this person, now this environment, that the anger keep on coming. So you have to, okay, there's one way you can handle it. Loving kindness meditation, metta. Metta is the only antidote can help you, and also can soften his heart. I want to relate my story with you. Many years ago, when I was in Malaysia, and I lived with one lady, I think she's not Buddhist, so she didn't show respect to monastic. So when she stayed with us, she's very rude. And when the way she talked to us is very rude manner and very rough.
started to feel very uncomfortable because we are practitioner. That energy is, we are very sensitive to that type of energy. So then I say that I need to do something to change the situation. So I go, I step out to the house, go to another house nearby, and I take this person's as object of my loving kindness. So may she be free from suffering, may she be free from anger, may she be free from anger. After half an hour, I went back home, went back that building. When I stepped in, my friend, another monastic sister, another sister told me that, "Hi sister, this lady prepared two gifts for us. And this lady presented the gift by bowing three times to me. Before that, she's so rude to me. She's extremely rude. You know, the way she talks is uncultivated. But after half an hour of loving kindness meditation, the situation changed. And this is the first time I really experienced how powerful loving kindness is. Before that, I never experienced that. So maybe you can learn loving kindness meditation. Keep on sending love to this person. You can soften his heart, and you also feel happy. And when you practice in this way, gradually you don't feel anger, you don't have fear towards his anger. Rather, you will have compassion towards his anger. Because those who get angry is the person who suffers most. No? So instead of suffering, then you will become have more compassion toward his anger. Then your fear will disappear. So this is the only way I think can help. Okay, that's all for today.
Thank you.
So we still have 5 books here. So you want to get now, you can get it now. Or if you want order, then we'll get it later.
I will get it.
Please come forward and
oh,